Hi, and welcome back to the podcast, Decades Under Roads. This is Maddie.
And this is Catherine. And today we're welcoming Ted, who is a local legend around here. He's a houndsman. He's been a part of ODFNW's population studies on cougars, bears, and bobcats since, do you say the 80s?
Yeah. 70s.
Somewhere in there. I'm sure you'll hear him say it in the pod.
Yeah, yeah, you can fact check us on the numbers.
No, he's honestly got some great stories about guiding and kind of how long he's been doing this.
Yeah, he's got stats that I just have never seen in any sport before.
Oh my goodness, yeah. So we noticed towards the end of the episode that he's wearing this belt buckle, and at first glance it looks like a rodeo belt buckle, so I was going to ask him if he rodeoed, and then you look a little closer, and it says 4,000 bears, and yeah. In the middle of it has two bang hounds. And yeah, that's a lot. Yeah. I mean, he has been hunting hounds for 60 years.
Yeah.
Is that the math we did?
And then some.
And then some. Yeah. 40s, since 1960 something. But
yeah.
Anyways, he's
a character. We'll leave it at that. He's a soft-spoken character, but he's got stories galore. So definitely happy we got to sit down with him and shoot the shit with a guy who's seen and done a lot of stuff.
So, Ted, why don't you introduce yourself? We know you're from Oklahoma, and kind of tell us how you ended up here in Oregon.
My folks just loaded up and took me out of the hills, and my mother had a brother that lived in Prineville. And my dad was a logger. He ran a skid cat, and he was getting 85 cents an hour. And we come out here to Prineville, and he went to work the next day for $1.80.
Damn.
So.
What year was that?
1948.
Oh, wow.
Spring.
Dang.
That's a big move.
Yeah. There wasn't very many roads. And
I can't imagine what that country looked like back there, because my husband's from Madras. And
oh, is he?
Yeah, so. Okay, you need to go lay down.
For preface, we do have the dogs with us today. They're a part of the interview.
Hear the pitter patter. Okay, so Prineville, and then
we moved back. You know, they saved a bunch of money back then, and so we moved back, bought a place, stayed there for 6 months. Dad couldn't find a job, so. We moved back to Prineville, and I spent, seemed like we always ended up someplace down along Crooked River. So I spent most of my childhood playing jungle gym and spearing fish and things like that down at the river.
Dang. Well, so you're kind of a local legend for this area, for hounds.
Yeah.
And running everything. Is that something that was always a hobby inside, like a big part of your side life, or is that your career? Like, I know you did those studies. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, I've done, I can't tell you how many studies. They shut the bobcat season down in, I think it was 1976. And so I went to a commission meeting and wanted to know why, because we had lots and lots of bobcats. And they told me, you take your biologist out and show him bobcat tracks, and we will open up the bobcat season. And they did. I took him, Mark Engine was the biologist then, and I took him out and we showed him all kinds of bobcat tracks. And I don't know why I didn't have the dogs with me, but I did.
You're like, I can prove it. If you want to see tracks, I'll show you the cats.
But anyway, they opened that season back up, and then I went in and volunteered. I think it was 1972 to help the Fish and Wildlife if they had a problem with cougars or bears or anything. And of course, Mark Engine had just moved here, and he was really interested in research. So that's how it got started. It was all Mark Engine's doing. And then we did that cougar study in Catherine Creek. Mm-hmm. And we had 29 cougars collared. We didn't have a mall collar, but 29. Wow. And we had a good deer population. But you get your pencil out and start figuring how many deer, if they take one a week, the population is going to just go away.
Right. It's not going to be there anymore.
And, yep. And in 1994 is when they stopped us from running cougars and bears with dogs. Mm-hmm. Well, the cougar season was just exploding at that time. And we had lots of porcupines, and we had lots of badgers and raccoons and beavers, and almost wiped them out. They totally wiped out the the porcupines in the mountains.
I was going to say, I've seen one porcupine since I've moved back over here.
And see, that was in 94 that they did that, and we had lots of porcupines at the time, but then the cougar population just exploded because every year we was going to a different unit and coming out with more tags. Mm-hmm. So they was doing an excellent job of controlling the cougars, but they just got to be too many whenever they cut it off. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's a shame.
And I live there in Catherine Creek right now, and it's pretty rare to see very many deer. We had two or three whitetail coming into the ranch and all winter long, and eating the alfalfa. Mm. But that's okay, you know.
Gotta make it through the winter.
Yeah. We laid it out there so they could eat it if they wanted it.
Yeah. So have you always been ranching and running dogs?
No. I cut logs for 15 years.
In this
when
area?
I moved to LeGrand in 1968, and I cut logs for Claude Roden. And then I went to work for Hafer, and I think I had 15 years. And I went to work for another guy, and we was over in Ladd Canyon, and I cut a big old tamarack, or not a very big tamarack, and it rolled down the hill. Mm-hmm. And when I bucked it off, that top end popped up, hit me just below the knee, and just tore everything out of my knee.
Oh,
oh gosh.
And the doctors said, you're never going to walk very good again. And you're never going to be able to cut logs again.
So were you a faller, or were you in the machines?
I was faller.
Oh, okay.
And so, I guess, in about the next year, which was in 1980. Mm-hmm. And I think in 1981, I did a lot of guiding back then for bears and cougars and bobcats. I had guide licenses and permits and it was shortly after that that I started, I was guiding Dale Wilbur. Mm-hmm. And he had the Crown and Bridge and dentures in town for the dentist that wanted him to work for him. So he told me, he said, why don't you come in here and learn how to do dentures and I'll just turn that part over to you, and you'll be on your own. I said, I don't know about that.
It's a big change.
It was a big change. But, you know, I did it, and I loved it, and I did it for 30 years.
Wow. I see, that's something I would have never guessed that you
had. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I did that. And then when I learned how to do it, mm-hmm. I was doing 5 days a week. I quit doing it on Fridays. And so Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I worked for the Fish and Wildlife doing research. And thought, boy, I like that. And I got a little better at doing it, and I was still making the same amount of money. And so I started taking Thursdays off, too. Boy, I get a lot of hound dog done in 4 days, weekend.
You're like half and half. That's a good time.
You're living the dream.
Oh, yeah. I loved it, and I still got my job done, so that's all that counted, you know.
Yeah.
The dentist that I worked for knew that they'd have to do Monday or Tuesday. Their denture patients had to be on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So
it Ted's worked busy out fine. The rest of the week.
Yeah. Ted will not be in the office.
Oh, man. So Do you have a good story about your first dog?
You know, my first dog, I was 16 years old, and I had to take the garbage to the dump. And I loved bird hunting, and I loved, but I didn't have a dog. Mm-hmm. And this red border collie, I pulled up to the dump, and she went on point to one of those little ground squirrels, mm-hmm. was sitting up on a rock. And I thought, you know, I bet that dog probably point a pheasant. And so I asked the guy, I said, hey, you want to get rid of that dog? And he said, well, she's got pups right now, but you come back in a couple of weeks and you can have her. Boy, I was right at his door in 2 weeks' time. And I had a friend that had an English pointer. And boy, he was a nice looking dog. Mm-hmm. And we was running around together after I got the dog. And was up Crooked River. And there was a whole bunch of, they'd cut an alfalfa field. They'd cut half of it. And there must have been 24 pheasants out there. And I wanted to take my dog with his and see, you know, yep. how she would do mm-hmm. against a real professional bird dog. Mm-hmm. So we turned them loose and walked down in the field. And just got to the edge of the field and my dog went on point.
Oh,
pheasant started flying, and his dog, it took him an hour to gather his dog up.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was my first really super dog. I bought me the first hound. I started hunting in 52. My brother just got out of the Army, and he was 9 years older than me, and he loved the hounds also, so I got to go with him at that time.
Yeah.
But once I got that bird dog, I'm telling you what, it was hard to keep me in school.
Yeah. Only 2 more years.
The head teacher there for the boys, you know, you had to have if you skipped school, you had to have a slip the next day. I was putting pheasant on the table every day. So my mom would write me a note saying, Ted was sick today, or yesterday, and it got to where when I'd go in to see the dean, he'd say, hey, Ted, what'd you kill yesterday?
They knew.
He knew.
They knew what you were doing.
So that was my first really super dog, but I bought me one, I think I was probably 18. I bought a little blue tick, and I paid $15 for him.
Wow.
And that's, I had him clean on till I went into the Army. And my brother kept him and hunted him and took care of him for me. And so I got out of the Army in 63. I got out in June of 63. And from then on, I hunted every chance I got.
Yeah, that's a big break.
Yeah.
At least you got to come home to happy
13
dogs.
Months I spent in Korea. Mm. So they had a little bird hunting going on over there, but I thought, no, I
don't want to mess around.
I don't want to mess. I'm just going to. I was officer's records clerk.
Yeah.
So I was a clerk typist in all the time I was in the service. Mm. I liked that. That was fun.
Yeah.
Taking care of the officer's records, they'd take care of you because you could sure mess up their records.
You think you're leaving?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, for people who don't know about hound hunting, you want to kind of break it down for someone who's kind of new to it?
Well, it's kind of tough. You know, back then we had no shocking collars, tracking collars, nothing. We just took the hounds and we'd go out and we'd go hunting, and if they struck something, we'd turn them loose, and I'd take in after them. My brother would drive around because he knew the country.
Yeah.
I didn't really. He was a logger, and he knew all the roads. So if I had to go up over a mountain down the other side, he knew there was a road over there. So
he'll come pick you up.
Yeah, that's the way we worked it.
Yeah.
Dang.
But I have to move to Sweet Home then, and I had my own dogs, and I hunted you know, every day that I could. Mm-hmm. But mainly just bobcats in the winter where, you know, mm-hmm. find their tracks in the snow. We didn't have any cougars in our area at the time. and I finally seen a cougar track. I went to Idaho looking for a good place to go cougar hunting, and we never found anything. But I was working for the Forest Service, running preliminary lines for roads.
So is that like surveying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I found a big old cougar track, and it was on a Friday. And I called my brother, and I said, boy, I bet we could catch him. So we took off back after work. We went up there and turned out on that cougar track. And we trailed him almost all night. Finally found where he killed a beaver. And, you know, they were hard on all the beavers and badgers and coons and things like that. But after he killed that badger and ate it, or beaver, we never could trail him any further. So the next time I seen a track, guys was logging, and I could see his track in their tracks. I could see the snow up between these cougars.
Yeah.
So I knew it was red hot. Yeah. Hadn't been a truck over it since he went through. So I had an old guy with me that he wasn't sure about chasing cougars. He was a little chicken, I think. And I said, I am going to turn these dogs out on this cougar. So I turned them out, and that was 1967. And right after that, they stopped all the cougar hunting with hounds. But I caught that one, weighed 168 pounds.
Wow.
Cow.
Yeah, he was a monster. But see, that's the way it was. Yeah. He was a single male, and he was just going looking for a new territory.
Mm.
So he just happened to pick the wrong date.
Yeah. Ted found him.
Ted found him.
That's the best part about working in the woods. It's like, hey guys, I see some bobcat tracks over here. Hey guys, there's some over here.
Yeah.
And they're like, come like hunting season, they're like, where have you been seeing stuff? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't even know what units these are. Yeah. I can't help you there, but I'll tell you where the bobcat tracks are in the winter.
Yeah, we've got one young guy that's trapping over there where we live. And I haven't had a chance to talk to him, so I don't know how he done this year, but I don't ever kill him. I just, the sports and training the dogs and running the dogs. But now that we have telemetry collars, I know exactly how far away they are, where they went, what roads they're on.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of years since I went home and didn't take all my dogs.
Yeah.
And it used to be I'd go hunting on Saturday, and I'd spend all day Saturday afternoon and Sunday looking for my dog.
Picking them up.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That is crazy. Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, I just upgraded my husband's GPS from the Gen 1 Garmin, and for 3 years, the maps have been broke. So all you can see are the roads. No contours, no nothing. And so that has been a pain in the ass. And so now we got the new version, or the, not quite the newest one, but the one below, and it actually has like maps and stuff on it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is nice.
Well, the Fish and Wildlife, you know, I've done work with them for so many years. Well, they got one of the alphas. It's the newest one.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not the newest one. They've got another one since then. But they got one so they could track my dogs when I was out.
Yeah.
And
you can add so many new things to it. It's so cool.
Yeah. And so whenever we got done with the research, well, they let me take their receiver and use it until they need it.
Oh, wow.
So, that's neat.
Yeah.
Man, you really weaseled your way in there and really found a good niche.
Yeah. A lot of years of research. I wished I would have wrote down, you know, when I started when I ended on all of them.
Yeah.
What's one of your favorite research?
I love the bobcats.
Really?
Yeah. But back then, it wasn't a big deal, drugs and stuff, you know. We had angel dust that we used for drugs.
To knock them out?
Knock them out.
What?
And we knew exactly how much to give them.
Ted, what?
A cat dose of angel dust.
You know, I could take the drug home with me or something because I was usually the one out, and I did most of that by myself. A lot of that that bobcat study. But that was neat. We had, I don't know, we only did it for a couple of years, but I think we had like 15 16 Bobcats collared, or ear tag. But finally somebody donated 4 collars. So the last year I put out, just right off the bat, I put out 3 collars, and it's all on females. And I caught another female, and they said, no, we want at least one male. Mm-hmm. And so I caught him a male, and we put a collar on him. And, if they die or they lay still for so long, mm-hmm. they have a death sensor on them. And as you go up Ladd Canyon on the freeway, off to the right, as soon as you get up on top, before you get to that first house, mm-hmm. there's a little rim up there. And I don't know if that cat got bumped on the freeway or something, but he was dead up there. And then the number one cat, the very first one we got, I caught her, I think, 5 years later, and she had a kitten with her. That was pretty impressive.
Oh, my gosh.
So, but no more killing. It's yeah. just train the dogs.
Have fun with it.
Having fun with it. It's fun to have, to tree a bear. Cougars, it's not so much, but bears, with the different shades, or they got a different spot. I treed one up on Glass Hill 6 years in a row. I treed him 2 or 3 times a year, and he just disappeared.
Wow.
And, well, they clear cut all the big stuff up there. And so when I was doing the bear study, I was up Limber Gym one day, and I treed this bear, and it was that old rascal. We called him Patch. He had a great big patch and a little black spot right in the middle of it. He was black bear. And it had kind of like a little mark, like a Q mm-hmm. on it. And we got him treed, got him our net set up, tranquilized him. And he fell out, and he was 350-something pounds then.
Good God.
How are you weighing them?
Well, we took him home, unfortunately. Uh-oh. I had a lodge pole that was about 4 or 5 inches, and he was dead. And I took my power saw and cut a notch in it to hold up one side of that net, because there was no trees on that side. Mm. But that always worked. But when he hit that net, it split, and he hit the ground, and it killed
him.
Just
too big. Oh, yeah. That's rough.
Oof. So that hurt.
Yeah, when you're trying to do good and it doesn't work out.
But, research, things happen.
Yeah.
I think all the bear that we treat, I can only think of one other one that he fell out and he hit a limb and he missed the net mm-hmm. and it killed him. But we're talking, we had 40-something bears collared at that time, so it was very successful.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. Are those collars still out, or are they probably dead by now?
No, they're all dead by now. We went and several of them, after the bear study, we caught them and took the collars off. Mm. And some of them, I know, one of them, while we were still doing the study, Jim and I went clear over to Austin Junction. He'd moved way off over there.
Yeah.
And tranquilized him and got the collar off of him.
That's a pretty, for a bear?
Mm-hmm.
That seems so
And we
far.
Had another one that went to Dale, where the Dale Ranger Station is over there. He was just right there behind that. Okay. And he weighed 76 pounds when we caught him. Mm-hmm. And this was the next spring. And we knocked him out and he weighed 168.
Look at him.
He's bulking good.
Yeah.
Well, he had a cub collar on, and it was not looking good.
Yeah, a little tight.
Yeah.
Probably could have been a little bigger.
So, we jumped in the rig and went home and went through all of our collars to make sure, and we went and caught every one of the yearlings that we had collared and took the collars off, because they were getting awful tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah, that'd be pretty uncomfortable. Yikes.
One of the last cougars I caught was a Starkey Experimental Station, and somebody had set snares around where the critters go under the fence, and they caught this big old tom, and he had just floundered around. His head was swollen up, but he'd come across the road, and I seen his track, but it was 2 days old, and the dogs couldn't smell it.
Yeah.
And so I told them, fish and wildlife guys, I said, why don't you guys drive around? There's roads that direction. I'm going to walk the dogs through here and see if we can't find this big old Tom. And sure enough, I didn't walk over 100 yards and jumped that cougar. He'd just laying out there asleep. We tranquilized him, we got him out, and he had a snare so tight around his throat, he couldn't eat. But I'm thinking he could at least drink. Boy, would you talk about a hard time getting something underneath where you could clip that off.
Oh, gosh.
And then his collar went bad, and I think it was like 2 weeks later, we had to go catch him and recollar him. And that had all healed up already that soon.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
So you talked a little bit about Jim. Do you want to kind of get into how you know him so then when we do his interview, can ask him about you?
Jim, boy, I don't know. I can't say enough good about him.
You know? We've heard a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was always right there. We had radios. We communicated all the time. He'd go one area and I'd go another with the dogs. And he'd check on other bears. And because most of the time I worked with Jim was just bears.
Oh, really?
We did some cougar. But, I can't think of that girl's name that used to work out here. She was in charge of the Mad Marsh. Kathy Nowak.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
She was trailing a big Tom cougar one afternoon late. And it got dark on her, so she was headed back for the pickup. She kept walking closer to the pickup, and the beeper on the cougar kept getting louder and louder because he was following her. And that scared her so bad, she says, no more big Toms, only females. So Jim and I went up and caught a couple of females for her. So that was something. She was just getting out of college, and she needed something on her resume.
Yeah.
So that's what we did.
Oh, she was young back for that.
Yeah.
Because she didn't she start that big Lad Marsh project back before?
No, but she took it over.
Oh, okay.
I forget who was doing it. But then she started working for them, and then they quit.
Mm-hmm.
And she took it over. And she, but that's how she got it, you know. She had all that experience stuff behind her.
In there. That's cool.
Not a lot of cougars down there, but
no, that's so cool because I went to college at Eastern and we did a lot of stuff on the marsh, and I've just heard her name so many times.
Yeah.
Between like a few of the professors that worked with her.
She was a nice lady to work with.
Yeah. That is.
She had a great sense of humor, and you know it's always better to working with somebody that's got a good sense of humor,
mm-hmm.
like Jim Aikenson.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So you talked a little about being a guide. What era of your life was that? Was that after?
That was before 94.
Okay.
And I'll start out with the worst one.
Okay.
I had a guy call me and wanted me to guide him. And I said, sure. But I said, what's your physical condition? He said, oh, I'm great. No problem.
Hmm.
I said, because sometimes you got to walk quite a ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took him and went up. See, we started up the Jarbo grade and found a cougar track and turned out on it, and it was red hot. We took it after. I didn't have a snowmobile or nothing. We just took off walking. And we got to where I could hear the dogs treed. And the guy says, Ted, I can't go any further. I said, what's wrong? He said, I got one wooden leg and it's just wearing me out. He said, I just can't go any further. And I could hear the dogs treed. So he turned around, went back to the pickup.
Yeah.
And, of course, I got to take care of my clients.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with him back to the pickup, made sure he got home okay. And I went back the next day to get my dogs, and they had moved. But I had beeper collars on them then.
Mm-hmm.
And the old cat had jumped out and moved a little bit there. That's the worst guy I ever had.
Ted never saw him again.
I'm great. I have one leg.
Yeah.
But most of them, you know, was really great. I had a lady that, she was really nice, really friendly. And I took her cougar hunting. And we went up out of Cove. And she says, now, Ted, I'd like to be home, you know, by 8 o'clock to where I can go to work. And she was pulling my leg. And she had a great sense of humor. And right off the bat, found three tomcat running together. They were like, oh, probably 140-pounders. But they were all litter mates, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And so we turned out on them, and they headed straight for town. And we got real close to where we'd already come in.
Yeah.
And she got to be home by 8 o'clock.
Big day for the guy.
That never happens.
That is incredible. That is a business trip for
She was really impressed. You know, and
you're like, this always happens.
I wasn't out there to impress her.
Yeah.
I was just trying to catch her a cougar. But
Power three.
Yeah.
She thought it was great that she got it that early and got to go home.
Yeah.
I think her husband was supposed to go with us. The next day was going to be Saturday, and that was on a Friday. And so he didn't get to go cougar hunting.
She did it for him. Three in one day.
Yeah. That's
funny. I had one guy and gal call me, and this guy was doing all the talking, but his wife had the tag. So we went up Bear Creek out of Wallowa, and the snow was deep. You could drive to the, there's a park over there on Bear Creek,
mm-hmm.
and you could drive to it. But I had my son with me then, and he was like 10 years old, but he was tough.
Yeah.
And me and a friend of mine, Monty Rowe, and so we parked on the Huckleberry side and walked way over into the wilderness area. And I had radios, so I told this guy, I said, we'll keep in contact with you because we was up on top of Huckleberry, so we could talk to you. And he said, okay, all right. And we get up there, and here's a cougar track going toward this park. Big old cat. So I could hear the dog's tree, and I called this guy and told him, I told him to walk up that trail,
mm-hmm.
and treed right beside the trail.
Nice.
So he beat me to the tree, and he said that it was a nice tom, and his wife hadn't even got to the tree yet, and he had the rifle, and he said that the cat jumped out, and I shot him in midair. I said, yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't know if I believe that. I thought
that tag was your wife's tag.
Uh-huh.
And, well, I was afraid he was going to get away, so I thought I'd better shoot.
I bet she was pissed.
Oh, I don't know. I think...
A cougar flying. Interesting.
I think she was okay with that, really. Well, we could go on all night telling stories about my guiding, and most of them just the nicest people you'll ever meet. You know, they've decided that they want to spend a little money and go shoot a cougar or go shoot a bear. Mm-hmm. I tell you, something that I've always really enjoyed was helping the Fish and Wildlife. You know, if they had a cougar problem or a bear problem, I'd go take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go tree them and they'd shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
I never did much shooting them. And it was a little girl out of Elgin, and she just got her a lamb and a goat.
Oh, no. I don't like where this is going.
And,
oh, man.
Something come in and killed him one night.
Yeah.
And they was pretty sure it was either a coyote or a cougar, but they wanted me to come and check. So I went out and checked. Poor little girl was just crying her eyes out. And I trailed a little bit, but they couldn't do much with it. And I thought, I don't know. So I look around, and I got a pretty good eye about where an animal's going to be staying around somebody's house.
Mm-hmm.
There was a real nice thicket up there. And so I told the Fish and Wildlife guys, I said, I'm going to go up there and walk the dogs through that thicket. And it was Gordon Creek, right down on Gordon Creek. And I walked through there, and the dog struck just red hot. Just boom, out of there went. And it was like a 35-pound cougar. Her mother had dumped her off there, and she stunk so bad of skunk. So she'd been living on skunks. She come in there and killed that poor little girl. I felt so sorry for her. Just getting started, you know, in 4-H.
Yeah.
And I got a feeling that she probably quit right there. That was just too tragic for her.
Dang. I thought you were gonna. There was gonna be a plot twist, and the little girl ended up shooting the cougar. I was like, that would have been quite the vengeance story.
Revenge.
Yeah.
Do you get more calls these days for stuff in town, or?
You know, the last one I got was right above the hospital. I'm thinking.
I think I heard something about that.
Yeah, and we just took the dogs, and they just wanted to get rid of it. They was crapping all around the swimming pools and stuff up there. But it was just right behind the hospital. I just turned one dog loose because I didn't know who had house cats, and he wouldn't mess with house cats and nothing. I didn't know about the rest of them. And pretty quick, he just blew up, just bayed. And boom, you know, right? Right? The bushes was right next to these people's house. The bear was sleeping in there. And so he come out of there, and he went around, and I turned the other dogs loose that I had on the leashes, and he turned and he went down the pavement on that little, I forget the name of that little road.
The one that kind of zigzags back up?
Yeah, it's paved. It goes back up there for a ways.
Yeah.
He come down through that, and they treat him, I think it was less than 100 yards from the hospital's parking lot.
They can probably see him from the window.
Yes.
What a show.
And so they shot him out, and they weighed him, and he was 400 and something. He was a monster.
That was a town bear.
Well, he was eating goods. He was eating plums. It was just piles of plums off of those trees up there, and apples. And so he thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah.
And he was staying right there. I asked the fish and wildlife if I could have a toenail off of him.
Yeah.
You know, a bear that big. Mm-hmm. That'd be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. He had run up and down that pavement so much he didn't have any toenails. They were plumb off.
He really is a townie.
Is there a story to that belt buckle?
Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah,
4,000 bears. I didn't see the bottom. I just saw the top.
Well, I've got a diary that I... Every time I catch something, I write it down in there. And I started out, I thought, you know, I get up somewhere and I don't know where I'm going to go hunting, so I'll just look in this diary and, oh yeah, there's that place. That's a pretty good spot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I started doing that. And then it just got to be habit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd write down the date, what it was, where I caught it. And if, like, one dog did it all, then I'd write that dog's name beside it. Mm-hmm. But the guy over in Bend, Brad Mombert, I convinced him to write a little something, you know, how the dog's done.
Yeah.
And so he's been doing that, and I wish I would have done that years ago so
just
I know exactly what
out.
Dog. I could look back there and tell you exactly when that dog was born and when he died and stuff like that I never did do.
Yeah, you have so many dogs over your lifetime, and it's probably hard to keep track of them all.
I'm sure it'd be up into the hundreds.
Yeah. Having six dogs at a time.
Most of them, you know, they do good till they're about 10. I had one old dog that, I got his daddy from Ron Lay over in Baker. And then I got a registered female out of California. And I raised a litter of pups. And I had that old dog. His name was Bo. And big old red bone dog. And it's probably the best dog I've ever owned. And I ran a bobcat one day down Deer Creek. Big canyon going towards Wallowa.
Okay, yep.
I turned out on it at, I think it was 8 o'clock. When I turned out on that track. And I had a guy with me that was a photographer that wanted to take bobcat pictures. And at noon, he says, Ted, I got to go home.
You can't have a timeline like that when you're running around with dogs.
And you know, that old dog, and I had two or three more that run with him that was really good. And they ran that bobcat for 8 hours and 25 minutes. I've never even heard of that before.
That's a long race.
That's a long race.
Was he jumped the whole time, you think?
No.
Yeah.
No, he would get up in the brush and make circles like that. And they'd make a lose, but they'd pick it right back up again.
Yeah.
And I walked up and down that mountain till I thought I was going to be give out. And messed around and treated him right beside the road.
Oh, that is the worst.
That's.
But, you know, when I shot that cat out, he was stiff as a board. I mean, it's like he was froze. He didn't have nothing left.
Right.
Yeah.
He run everything in his body out. Mm. And that old dog was staying with him. So, yeah.
That's so cool. That's cool.
Matter of fact, the one I got now, that's going to be, he is 2 years old now. Mm-hmm. I named him Bo. He's a great, big, old, tall, lanky, red-boned dog.
He's got a lot to live up to.
Yeah. Boy, he, I doubt if he ever does that.
Yeah.
And that dog was outrunning everything I had when he was 12 years old.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's really unusual for a hound to live that long and still be that agile. But between 12 and 13, he just nosedived. Mm. I said, "That's okay, old boy. You're retired."
Yeah. He gave it all he had.
No.
Thanks for doing this, Ted.
Yeah.
You bet.
And as always, like, subscribe, give us a review, shoot us an email, and remember to get outside.